Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sandra Humbles. She is the Vice President of Global Education Solutions at Johnson & Johnson Institute. Sandra, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here with you, Nick. Thank you for inviting me.
So before we kick off into some of the things that you're doing that I think are extraordinarily exciting in terms of education, the virtualization of a number of things, tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are, your journey and some of your background.
Yeah, well, so I'm originally from England, as you can probably tell from my accent, and I've always been hugely interested in science and technology, and very quickly moved into Johnson & Johnson, really focused on making a difference to patients' lives. And with that then came that every day you get up thinking about solving problems and helping people. And so naturally, as my career journey continued, I started to focus in education, helping first our commercial organizations be their best selves when they're by the side of our surgeons. And then now with a huge external focus on doing everything possible to help our surgeons and learner surgeons, look after their patients in the best way possible. And obviously, that has just become what I do every day and come to work very motivated to make a difference in education.
So obviously a long career spanned, multiple countries. And I'm imagining you probably grew up in the same era that I did from a clinical education where it was see one, do one, teach one. But we've moved on from that, but not as far as we would have liked. But that's really part of your focus at this point, and we've seen a change. Tell us a little bit about that sort of inflection point as it occurred in your world.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. And, as we started to think about, the Johnson & Johnson Institute and how it could really make a difference, we needed to think about different channels instead of just the face-to-face component of how surgeons learn. And they learn better from their peers, and that. But it needed to be, how do you build the cognitive skills? How can you use different digital channels to help? And what we realized, there's always been a place, for videos, watching a surgeon doing a procedure on a video was really the earliest way of doing this. But then we started to look at things like, virtual reality and, what role could that play, on this, this lens of education. And, with that, you've got to look at, you're building the cognitive skills, but you've also got to be able to have some assessment and feedback. And therefore, as we've been looking at that space, finding the right strategic partners to help you build the virtual reality experiences, also building the assessment piece and the feedback piece, and then really proving that it makes a difference. And, I think a game-changing piece was when we actually started to research the value of virtual reality and what it could do, and that you can then stop doing certain face-to-face training and replace, that really gave us the confidence to invest in those platforms.
Step back in time, if you can, before the sort of matrix that we all went into, and your first interaction with virtual training, beyond the sort of video, which I think we've had reasonably long experience, can you remember that experience and anything that stood out to you at the time? Did you go, wow, I see this developing? Or was it just kind of, no, that's just for gamers?
No, I can tell you the first time I ever went into a virtual reality experience, it was like, this is going to change the world. and it was exactly that. You went in and, I'll never forget when I put my first headset on. And you actually believed you were there. You believed you were in that experience, and it was completely immersive. And lived the really the promise of that technology. But we then started, you know, probably 3 years ago to start building procedures. So our first foray was into our orthopedic space and building a knee procedure. And as soon as you saw a experienced attending surgeon put the headset on by my side and him going, oh my God, this is like doing the actual procedure. This is going to make a difference. And then within 5 minutes, he would have 20 other people around him wanting to take the headset and, you know, and go through that same experience. That's when you knew, and I knew, that, you know, this was going to help many, many people around the world. And it was part of the opportunity was figuring out scalability. But I can tell you, you know, and I'll give you another example, Nick, of when I just went, wow, you know, J&J, as you know, is moving into digital surgery and robotic surgery. And we've already built some virtual reality experiences of what that's going to be. And the first time I put my headset on to learn how to set up the operating room, and I went through the virtual reality experience in about 20 minutes, then took the headset off, then moved into the lab setting, and then I could actually set up the robot myself. You've just realized you've took away all that face-to-face training that used to take a lot of effort, doing it time and time and time and time again. And now you can do it once in a headset, and you can make that available to the scrub tech, to the operating room nurses, to the surgeons, to all of them, and they can learn the same way in a very rapid pace. And also, you may have some people who are not as confident, and I think that's the beauty of virtual reality. You can go through it the first time, and we're all competitive, right? We all want to be, you know, the best at the best, and you might not do it right first time, and then you put the headset on again and you replay. And literally, after multiple times, you realize then you've built that skill, and then you take the headset off and then do it for real, and you can actually do it without any guidance. That's what was game changing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because I hark back to my experiences, and, you know, there was certainly a separation of individuals and confidence, you know, a spectrum of it. And if you had confidence, which was probably misplaced, you were jumping in and feeling like you knew, and hopefully it went well. But the opportunity to try it up front. And one of the things that I recall initially, and I had a similar experience, you know, when I saw it, but I wasn't quite as moved, I think, because it wasn't good enough. That was one of the challenges. Now, it's improved. What are the things that you've seen over the course of the last few years that have sort of had the inflection points? Or what were the insights that you go, wow, that's going to make? I mean, aside from obviously a surgeon going, holy smokes, this is amazing. What are the innovations that you've seen and developed that really start to push this forward?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously for the surgeon community, data talks, right? They always want the data. And so I'm going to start there and then get to the innovation. But we took a risk, and we partnered with the Imperial College London to actually do a study around our VR training module on the anterior approach to hip surgery. This was to really improve the training at the residency level. 83% of the VR trained surgeons were able to perform the surgery in a lab setting with minimal guidance, whereas none of the traditionally trained surgeons were able to do the same. So what that meant was suddenly you had data to prove that virtual reality could actually train better than the traditional method. That was game changing, because before we had the data, it was exactly what you said, Nick. It was fun. So we proved even the basic modules now could help immensely at that learner surgeon level. So then we did then go out and search for the best illustrators and, you know, people who have the medical illustrators. And that's where also VR came in, and their capability to be able to get to something that looks even more real than what we had before, again, was the innovation we were looking for. And then the third component was getting to the analytics and the assessment piece and the feedback. So getting a score, if you will, of how well you did the procedure and giving that feedback to the learner surgeon. So having the data and analytics platform on the back end was very important. And then the fourth one, no surprise, anyone could, you know, put a headset out there, but how do you keep it up to date? How do you keep it connected with the control center? And that's when we formed the partnership with Oculus and the Oculus platform, business platform, so that we can connect all of our headsets all around the world, and that you can at any moment in time then update with a new module, with new insights, etc. And you get this globally connected platform that can really help all surgeons all around the world. So I would say having data to prove VR works, having the right medical illustrators and the right, you know, platform to be able to do that. And then the third component is getting to the data sets to help guide the improvements where you really need to focus.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have an N of one versus an Imperial College study, but it was very humbling to be in a virtual training center for laparoscopic surgery and watch my daughter at the time, who she was still in high school, maybe college. And she literally raced through all seven things and was doing laparoscopic cholecystectomy in under 30 minutes. And I couldn't get past episode one. So this opportunity is just enormous. And I think the digital natives who are starting to descend into this world are adopting it. Are you finding that in your experiences?
100%. You couldn't have said it better, Nick. And I think that's the brave new world we're now in. You know, I would say the way that, you know, see one, do one, teach one, those days are going. The digital natives are coming in and they are learning so fast. Now, what is complex for them, Nick, is they have to learn now open, laparoscopic and robotic and digital. Right. So the amount of information that our new residents and fellows are leaning into is very, very different. And therefore, they had to figure out how to learn faster, how to gain those skills. And, you know, your daughter example is what we're seeing every day. And, you know, maybe just telling you what then happened with COVID. And this is, you know, actually true story. You know, in the United States, as COVID start to hit, you know, our residents who would normally be coming into face-to-face education to get that practical component before they moved into the operating room was put at risk with the reduction. And, you know, in the sort of April, May timeframe, the number of calls we were getting from program directors around what could we do to help virtually was, you know, off the charts, and virtual reality has played a great place. So we scaled up quickly the number of units that we could send out, that the academic medical center took ownership of them, and then they could run their own virtual reality programs to help the residents, you know, as we speak. And we've deployed every single set we've had. We've got, you know, those young kids in the virtual reality right now and making a difference to help them get ready to be in the operating room.
It's fantastic. It's, you know, again, one of the things that everybody that listens to my show will know is I seek those silver linings. And this is another one that's really sort of accelerated things. For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Today, I'm talking to Sandra Humble. She is the Vice President of Global Education Solutions at Johnson & Johnson Institute. We were just talking about the sort of, I guess, the acceleration of virtual reality that came as a result of this COVID-19 matrix that we've all descended into. Tell us a little bit about that experience. Was there a notable trigger? What was the reaction? How has that gone?
Yeah, so I can only take you back a few months, and it was the beginning of March. I was on a call with my Global Education Council, and they're my top advisor of key opinion leaders from around the world. I will never forget that day. I was sat there listening to them, and we normally do, you know, a topic where we would get, you know, insights and, you know, advice from them. And we decided to ask the question, and it was a very simple question: how are you doing during, you know, COVID? And, you know, we had people from China, we had people from Spain, we had people from Italy, and we had obviously people from the United States. And they were obviously all at very different points in time. You know, the China surgeons were starting to tell us about recovery and how they were getting patients back in safely into the operating room. Spain and Italy at the time were at their peak, and it was just chaos and, you know, just pleading for help, if you will. And then the United States were like, interesting, what's going on? What experiences are you having? I mean, it was, you know, and I'm talking March. I mean, I cannot believe that we're here in August. And this was, you know, a few months ago. And so they said, and I'll never forget it, Nick, they said, we're scared. The United States people are saying, we don't know what we don't know yet. We need you as the Johnson & Johnson Institute to step up like you've never before and help us to get the information that our China colleagues have and our Italy and Spain colleagues have and help that to be shared. And I have to tell you, it's the proudest accomplishment in my career. Within 48 hours, we had decided to partner with a company called the AIS Channel, who are based out of Barcelona. And they have some of the best online digital education you will ever see. The Johnson & Johnson Institute, you know, supplied an education grant to help them to get all of the expertise from China to put it into online learning modules about basic PPE, basic ventilation, safe surgery practices for different specialties, and also then working with prestigious societies around the world, including ACS and AORN, to get their guidelines out into the public domain. And, you know, we formed that, you know, hub with the COVID resource hub with the J&J Institute, linked to the AIS channel. Since March to today, we have touched over 4 million HCPs in 150 countries, and we have seen 470,000 completed online courses for basic training around PPE, ventilation, you know, all of those things that, again, I will look back and say, did I make a difference during COVID? The J&J Institute stepped up when it was needed. And, you know, today those resources are available free to everybody. You just have to log in and go and use them. And, you know, what's been interesting during the last 4 months, you know, different countries have accessed at different times, right? So to start with, it was all EMEA were accessing those resources. And as we sit here today, you know, it's more the Indias, the, you know, emerging countries that are now accessing it. And those resources will be live until we get the, you know, the vaccine and the solve here. So again, just something we did very differently in forming really good strategic partnerships, using education grants to help those companies that could make a difference.
Yeah, I hopefully most people, if not all, have the same desire as to, you know, look back and say, did I make a positive difference? And I think that's, you know, the essential part of this in terms of pulling together, you know, the importance of making all of that available that, you know, is evidenced by the number of people accessing that. Tell us a little bit about where you see this going. You know, I would say, like many things, we've seen the sort of, you know, it's like tossing gasoline on a fire. It's accelerated things in a great way, in my view. There are still problems. I mean, I think this is an imperfect technology that still has to be refined. Tell us a little bit about where you see the challenges and the opportunities going forward and what we can expect in the future.
Yeah, so Nick, I wish you had a visual of me. You'd see my hair on fire because, yes, the gasoline did get thrown. And, you know,
we might arrange for that in the blog post.
It was very funny. No, but you know what? It was exactly what you said. It was seen as a massive opportunity. We knew there was this convergence of the digital natives coming in. There is the amazing expertise of our KOLs, but there was this gap on the how to deliver education. And actually, COVID-19 has accelerated everything digital. And now there is two things that really have happened. More acceptance of everybody. you know, I have seen more, you know, surgeons and KOLs come on to virtual meetings and wanting to learn new skills around facilitating in a virtual world. And then from an educational standpoint, our business leaders now also see there are different ways of doing this. I think one of the biggest ones that is emerging right now, so we've talked about virtual reality, we've talked about online, but I'm also seeing trends in the tele, you know, the telemedicine, the telementoring, the telehealth, right? I think that's another trend that you're definitely seeing. And I don't think it will go back exactly how we saw it. So the next frontier or the and that we're now working on is figuring out how to do preceptorships and proctorships digitally. You know, again, the model there, Nick, has been, you know, a learner surgeon may go and fly and stand by, you know, an expert in their operating room and watch the procedure and ask the questions. Well, doing that digitally now is actually very simple. And then the reverse is becoming something that we definitely see as doable and is working, where a new surgeon who is trying to do a procedure in a different way or using a different technology can now be proctorshipped remotely. And that is also an absolute reality now. So I'm not sure we're going to return back to seeing people flying from A to B to Z anymore. I think they are going to be much more open to digital coaching, digital support, and I think, you know, things like virtual reality are just going to become the norm. So we are scaling as fast as humanly possible. We're building new skills in our own organization to be able to do this. And I have to tell you, you know, our key opinion leaders, our faculty are leaning in with us to want to do this. And it definitely is a brave new world. And I don't see it returning to where we were, you know, last year. It's going to be a very different future for us in education.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's sort of notable about that is that that virtual proctoring is so much more scalable. I mean, one of the challenges was with many of these procedures, new devices that come up, there's like one or two experts and they can't be all of these places because all that time that's taken up. So I agree with you. I think we'll never return to whatever people consider normal. I think it will be the new version of that, which will be an improved version. It's augmented in a way that's positive. For me, that's an exciting opportunity. We've just got a short time left. In the closing minute or so, tell us what you're excited about in the coming months and, you know, where do you see things perhaps in 2-3 years, if we can even predict that far in advance these days?
Yeah, Nick, you know, for me, it is exactly what you say. It's being able to scale to larger audiences and into those markets where maybe we didn't have access. I think our digital ecosystem is going to allow that. And the end result will be to help more patients and get to better patient outcomes. You know, I get excited about the, you know, opportunity now of personalized learning, right? So that's where we're going. Let's assess where somebody is in their learning curve and then get the right training in the right place, whether that's digital or face-to-face, and customizing that experience as we go. So the future is bright. We're going to touch more surgeons, touch more learner surgeons, and help more patients around the world. So just appreciate the chance to talk to you and share our journey.
Fantastic. Well, as usual, we've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you for taking the time to join me. I think this is an exciting journey. As I say repeatedly on this show, there are silver linings all around us. And whilst it's easy to focus on it, the only thing that we can control is our response to it. And, you know, I think your response and Johnson & Johnson is a positive approach to the difference that you can make. I applaud that. I'm excited about it. And I'm excited about it from a personal standpoint because my daughter is third year medical student and struggling with all of this virtual world. So, you know, exceedingly important to me. So, Sandra, thanks for joining me today.
No, I really appreciate it, Nick. And stay safe. And let's get your daughter practicing surgery. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.